Hi there, Rolly here. It's tough to believe that we've made it to episode three. Maddie and I really appreciate everyone who's tuned in thus far, and we hope you like it enough to tell your friends to also listen in. Before we get into the life of Julius Caesar, there's a couple of things we want to get out of the way. We'll mention during this episode that we had to rush this one a little bit because I was about to leave the country for about 10 days, and my co-host Maddie had just gotten back to her home from an out-of-state trip. During the episode, I made a couple of remarks that were unclear and likely unfair, and I also made a couple of mistakes. Initially, I should have clarified that Tiberius Gracchus wanted to distribute Italian lands to the plebs, but also to use funds from a kingdom that had been willed to the Roman Republic in totality by a king named Attalus of Pergamum. He wanted to use this money to fund the plebs who were going to live on the lands he was planning to redistribute. Also, when I spoke about Sulla, I was unclear on the foundation of the civil war between him and Marius. I oversimplified Sulla's origins. I really should have clarified that legalized murders were called prescriptions, and I should have noted that those prescriptions began before Sulla was named dictator for life. Sulla is a supremely complex and interesting character. In light of all this, we will be doing episode number six on Sulla, and I think that that episode is going to be an absolute banger. I should not have referred to Venus as the really good-looking girl. I should have referred to her as the goddess of love, beauty, and fertility, at least in the eyes of Roman and Greek culture. While we're happy with this overall story and its accuracy, I just want to apologize for some of the errors and the murky explanations. Now, let's get into the early life of Gaius Julius Caesar. Hello, and welcome to History and Zoomer. I'm Rolly.
And I'm Maddie.
Today is episode three of season one. And we're going to be talking about one of history's most iconic figures, Gaius Julius Caesar.
I had no clue he had a first name. I thought that was his whole thing.
Gaius Julius Caesar. So his name was Gaius.
Guys.
He was from the Julii family, and
All right.
he was from the Caesar branch of that family.
Okay, understood.
All right. So we are recording this episode in kind of a rush, Maddie, because at the time of recording, you have just returned from some sort of vacation to places unknown.
True that.
And I myself will actually be traveling to Rome, which we're talking about in this podcast, tomorrow. So we kind of got to get this thing moved along. You'll have hopefully a good couple of weeks here. And I'll be sure to tell you and all of our listeners about my adventures in the Eternal City when I return.
Gonna be a fun time for you.
I sure hope so. So anyway, back to business. If you recall, Maddie, we talked a little bit about Julius Caesar leading up to his assassination on the Ides of March, which you mentioned was actually, I think, like your brother or your sister's birthday or something the last time we talked. I can't remember exactly.
That's right, my older brother's birthday.
March 15th is your older brother's birthday, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool. So I told you then that sooner than later we'd be telling the story of the early life of Caesar, which was quite a roller coaster ride. He had a lot of fun growing up, let's just say. Before he became a dictator, a general, and a man who would essentially bring the Roman Republic to its knees, Caesar was just another young, ambitious patrician. Pretty poor, too. But he always seemed to find himself at the right time and place to get a little more powerful.
Because he's just that guy.
I think that's what you guys would say, right? He was also a pretty brave dude, and I
Yeah.
think we'll see some of that in this episode. So today, like I said, we'll talk about his early life, which will kind of highlight the beginning of the end for the Roman Republic. And I think we'll say goodbye just as he forms the first triumvirate, which we talked about in episode one.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, let's get into it. But before we talk about Caesar, we do need to talk about what was happening in Rome, so that we can get a kind of a solid foundation for his story. You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's hear it.
All right, let's do it. So the Roman Republic, just before Caesar was born, was in a really weird place. Internationally, it was unquestionably the dominant state in the Mediterranean world. They had just beaten Carthage in three successive wars, ending with the total destruction of the city and the annexation of northern Africa as three provinces of Rome.
Oh, wow. Okay, Roman Republic. We see you.
They had also crushed Macedonia, which was the most powerful of the three successor states of Alexander the Great's empire. Romans were richer than they had ever been, There was money, food, clothing, decorations, slaves, and everything else you can imagine pouring into the city from Spain, Africa, Greece as tribute, and other parts of the Mediterranean through trade. So it all sounds pretty good, right, Maddie?
Yeah, it does sound pretty good.
Well, maybe not. The Senate, which was composed of a bunch of wealthy nobles, was super greedy and just kept most of the spoils to themselves. So all that stuff that was coming in, the rich were keeping it all. Meanwhile, yeah, greedy for sure, Rome's common citizens, the plebs, were getting nothing.
Pleb.
You like that?
It's kind of a funny name.
Yeah, the pleb. they were called plebeians, but a lot of people just call them plebs now. So the plebs were getting nothing. And on top of the fact that they were getting none of the spoils, they were also all losing their jobs to slave labor. Because the rich people were like, why would I pay you some money when I could have this guy do it for free? Yeah. So the nobles then started preying on the impoverished plebs by offering to buy their farms for next to nothing. And then on top of that, letting their slaves do the work. So basically, they would buy your farm for a lot less than it was worth. And then throw you off the property and bring slaves to work the farm for you. So once you kind of went through that money, which wasn't a lot, you were destitute.
Okay, that's evil.
I guess it was evil, Maddie. So by 133 BC, the seeds of revolution were already planted when a fellow named Tiberius Gracchus tried to redistribute land back to Rome's poor.
Okay, well, to the plebs.
To the plebs. Well, he was murdered by a mob of those very same senators that were being greedy.
Aw, poor guy. He's just trying to help them out.
His brother Gaius Gracchus, no relation to Julius Caesar, tried to follow in his footsteps about 10 years later and basically was killed as well.
Wow.
So at that, I don't know if unlucky is the right word or a victim of, he was not a great guy, but one day we'll talk about the revolution of the Gracchi because that's a great story too. I don't know if we'll have time, but we'll see if we can figure that out. The Republic was starting to just break up and fracture, right? So things internally were going really badly, despite how well they were going around the world for them. So you kind of fast forward to the late 2nd century BC. Two guys named Marius and Sulla were two powerful generals that had done a lot of winning, as the Romans were doing a lot of, in wars. During a time of peace, they took advantage of Rome's instability, and they decided that they were going to try to rule Rome as dictators. Well, they had a civil war with each other. And a guy named Sulla, after marching on Rome twice, which was unheard of, won the civil war. So,
what does marching on Rome mean?
He brought his army to Rome. So essentially, Marius was like a populist, right? So he was about giving stuff back to the people, and the reason he wasn't killed like the Gracchi is because he had a big army at his back.
Mm-hmm.
Sulla was a rich senator. So Sulla obviously wanted to be conservative and keep things the way they were, and Marius wanted to kind of give back to the people. Now, Marius was not a great guy. Ultimately, he was just greedy as well. But the bottom line is they went to war. And obviously, the people of Rome mostly supported Marius because he said he was for them, right? So he was trying to give them land and do reforms so that the common folk had a better advantage.
Okay.
The bottom line is that he won the war. He declared himself dictator for life, and he purged his enemies everywhere, in the Senate, in the streets. He basically did what was called legal murder. One of those people he targeted was a young man named Gaius Julius Caesar.
Oh, that's the guy from earlier.
That's the guy this episode's all about.
So let's
get into Caesar. So Caesar was born around 102 BC. Mm-hmm. into the ancient Julii family, as we discussed earlier.
Yes.
That lineage dated itself all the way back to Rome. In fact, they claimed it came from the Trojan prince Aeneas. I don't know if you remember, we talked about him last episode. He's the guy whose dead cousin told him in a dream that he needed to go to Italy and found the kingdom there.
And I do remember.
So that's the guy. So Julius Caesar's family claimed that they were descendants of that guy. So they were like the top dogs in all of Rome, right? If you think about it, they were the noble family descended from the guy who founded it all.
And people just believed him?
Yeah, the Romans were pretty superstitious, and they all claimed to be descended from gods. And Caesar's family also claimed that Aeneas was the son of Venus, the goddess of love, like the really good-looking girl, who was also a goddess, and so they also claimed they were descendants of Venus as well.
Okay.
That being said, despite all the prestige, they had fallen on some hard times financially, so they were politically pretty obscure by the time Caesar was born. His father, who was named like him, was a politician and was kind of starting to turn things around, but he died suddenly when Caesar was 15. His mother was a rich pleb, but she came from a powerful and respected family as well. She would influence him throughout his whole life, and, you know, she was pretty politically shrewd and kind of, like, guided him when he was young to be successful. But most importantly was his mom's good friend and Caesar's aunt, Julia. Now, the Romans were not very creative with their names, so all of them were named either Caesar or Julia or Julius or whatever, based on the name of the family. So, she happened to be married to that fellow, Marius, who lost the civil war that we talked about. He was the mortal enemy of Sulla. And it should be noted that Marius essentially lost the civil war by dying of old age, right? So, like, the reason Sulla was able to win in the end is because Marius died. So everyone in Rome that was protected to Marius never suffered while he was alive. He just died. So Caesar's aunt was married to this Marius guy.
Okay.
Which obviously made Sulla not love Caesar because he was technically part of that family. So in 84 BC, when Caesar was, I don't know, 17, 18 years old, he was appointed something called the Flamen Dialius.
The Flamen Dialius. Okay,
yeah, Caesar. That sounds pretty cool, right? But it wasn't as cool as you think it is, because it was a high priest of Jupiter, which was the Roman version of Zeus. But it was a position that had some pretty strict rules. He couldn't ride a horse. He couldn't touch metal. He couldn't look at an army. He couldn't leave the city of Rome for more than overnight. So if he left, he had to be back before nightfall. It was a lot of rules.
Wow, very strict.
So he was kind of put there to keep him on the political sidelines.
Okay.
He also married a girl named Cornelia, who was the daughter of a guy named Cinna, who was also an ally of Marius. So he was related to Marius's wife, and he was married to Marius's top lieutenant's daughter. So Sulla really did not like this guy. So when he came to power in 82 BC, as I told you, he launched essentially a reign of terror. He was just legally murdering all his enemies, and Caesar, by virtue of his ties to Marius through blood and marriage, was on that list.
Wait, why is it legal?
Because when you're the dictator, you hold all the power, so you can just legally say any people
do whatever you want.
Not, you know, that's pretty much it. So Sulla told Caesar he needed to divorce Cornelia, and he was like, absolutely not, I'm not divorcing her. Which is pretty wild. I mean, to just say no to this guy. And that should definitely have meant his death. He was stripped of his priesthood, and then he went into hiding and essentially was, like, underground railroading it from house to house just to, like, escape Sulla's agents. So he was, like, living in different houses every night, escaping through, like, sewers and tunnels and stuff like that. It was quite the adventure. And then eventually, did you call him a diva?
Yeah, I did. He's a diva.
Okay. Like Beyonce?
Yeah, like a girl boss, you know? That kind of thing.
When we get into the story, maybe you'll have better reason to call him a grand boss, but we'll see.
Ooh, okay.
So he had some allies that begged for his life, and Sulla was getting older and was getting ready to kind of like retire, and he agreed, but he said, in Caesar there are many Mariuses. So basically saying that Caesar was worse than Marius ever was. He was saying that to the rich senators, saying like, you gotta watch out for this guy.
All right.
Turns out Sulla was not really wrong about old Julius Caesar. So even though he pardoned Caesar, he didn't allow him to stay at Rome. He basically sent him out with the army. While he was out east with the army, he was sent to a place called Bithynia to meet with its king named Nicomedes. It should have been a short mission where he just essentially secured some ships and free passage for his army, for his navy, I should say, to get through a certain spot near Bithynia. But Caesar stayed for a lot longer than he should have. And there were some rumors that him and Nicomedes were having an affair.
They were lovers?
Those are the rumors. In fact, the rumors were so strong that Caesar was mocked for the rest of his life. He was often mocked as the queen of Bithynia.
Oh, wow. Now he's really a diva.
See? I thought you might like this. Luckily for Caesar, Sulla, much like Marius, is already pretty old. And in 78 BC, he died. When he died, Caesar was like, I'm on my way back home, right? I don't really see a reason to stay out here now that the guy who wants to kill me is dead.
Yeah.
So even though he was still a young man, people were already kind of starting to talk about this guy who escaped the legal murder, did his thing militarily, got out about, was able to secure some alliances out east, and outlived the guy who really wanted him dead.
Hell yeah, he did.
So on his way back home, a pretty dramatic episode occurred. Caesar was sailing to Rhodes, which was on the way back to Rome. So Rhodes is a little island off Greece in the Mediterranean, and he was captured by pirates.
Ah. Was it Captain Hook?
I don't think Captain Hook was alive back then, man. Captain Hook's more like a Peter Panish type of guy, right? But
Okay, all right.
After the pirates captured him, they brought him to their little hideaway, and they wrote to Caesar's family asking for a ransom of 20 talents of silver.
Oh, Caesar, is that a lot? Translate that to real money for me.
100 grand.
Ah, that's a lot.
Not for Caesar, apparently, because he got mad at them. And he was like, what are you doing? You should be asking for 50 talents of silver. Do you know who I am?
Oh, okay.
The pirates thought he was funny, asked for the 50, and then let him kind of like hang out with them. And they were joking around, reading poetry together, having a good time. And he would ask them to like be quiet when they were making too much noise when he was trying to sleep. And he once even said to them that when he was freed, he would one day return and crucify them all. They laughed at him, but amazingly enough, the 50 talents of silver arrived, and Caesar left with the people who bought the money. And a short time later, he came back with a small fleet, captured the pirates, and crucified them as promised.
Oh, wow. I mean, hey, he holds true to his word, so good for him.
They do say, though, that he had a soft spot for the pirates, so he slit all their throats before he crucified them, so that they wouldn't suffer. Because crucifixion is...
That's really, really nice of him.
Yeah, I guess so.
He
returned to Rome, and he studied law and rhetoric under a guy named Apollonius Malon, and he began to prepare himself for a career in politics.
Okay.
Now, Caesar was very good on the public stage. He aligned himself with Marius's faction, the Populists, and claimed to be supporting the common people against the Senate nobility. He started with like pretty humble positions. He was like a military tribune, which is a low-level military position. Another position called quaestor, which is like a mid-level military position, serving in modern-day Spain. Okay. Unfortunately, that same year, his wife Cornelia and his aunt Julia both passed away.
Aww.
Caesar, the absolute wild man that he was, in their public funerals, he used images of his old uncle-in-law Marius.
Oh, wow.
And paraded them through the city.
What a sap, truly.
Now, Marius had been declared an enemy of the state by the rich senators, because if you remember, Sulla won. Even though Sulla was dead, the laws that he passed were still kind of there, and Caesar just didn't care. He just walked the streets in this funeral with images of this guy who was an enemy of the state, and the people ate it up. They loved it. they were big fans of Julius Caesar. So in 65 BC, he was elected aedile, which is the guy who organizes parties and stuff like that for the people. That was a political position. And he went crazy. He borrowed money from everybody he could and threw like the craziest parties, events, festivals, gladiatorial contests, anything that would thrill
the
masses.
Like the Great Gatsby of Rome.
Yes, that's a great reference. He kind of was like the Great Gatsby of Rome, except I guess he was not lying about his military exploits. So, as I said, though, he borrowed a lot of money. So even though he was super popular, he was also super in debt. Like, my man was leveraged to the hilt. He didn't have a lot of property because, as I had stated, his family, he was kind of born still pretty rich for an average Roman, but pretty poor for a Roman noble. And he was borrowing a lot of money from, let's see if you remember, that fellow named Marcus Licinius Crassus. Now, Crassus is the guy who I told you died by having gold poured down his throat when he lost the war to the Parthians.
I do recall.
That's the guy.
What a way to die.
That was not a good death for sure. So he owed that Crassus fellow a lot of money. And he thought the best thing to do would be to run for Pontifex Maximus, which was the high priest of all of Rome. It was a religious position that, unlike his last one, actually had real political power, came with money, and protected him from things like creditors.
I mean, that can't go bad, right? Because everyone, like, in Rome loved him.
Well, it didn't go bad at all, because despite his the best efforts of the Senate to fix the election, he won.
Hmm.
And he moved into the official residence of the Pontifex Maximus right in the middle of Rome. Right at the heart of Roman power. Basically across the street from the Senate.
Perfect.
Yeah, so they couldn't touch him. He was in the middle. Everybody had to come to him anytime they wanted to do anything. They would have to come to him for sacrifices, for advice. He knew everything. He was involved in everything. His power really grew tremendously. At least, not so much his power, but his influence, right?
Yeah.
But he looked at himself and he said the one thing that he hadn't really achieved was military glory, which in the Roman world, before you could really do anything, you had to be able to prove military glory. So he had himself, through his position as Pontifex Maximus, appointed governor of West Spain. Spain at the time was broken up into two provinces, Eastern Spain, Western Spain. He had himself appointed governor of Hispania Ulterior, which essentially is Western Spain, and brought an army over there and basically beat up a bunch of rebellious indigenous Spanish tribes, put them all down pretty mercilessly, stole their money, paid off a lot of his debts, and came back to Rome respected because he had won a ton of military engagements that predecessors of his not were necessarily losing, but were having a tough time with.
Hey, that's the dream come true for him. So,
now he wanted to run for consul, which was essentially like president of Rome, right, of the Roman Republic. There was the only difference is there was two consuls instead of a president and a vice president. You had two consuls, which led the armies, basically ran the Senate meetings, did all that stuff. He wanted to be consul, but everyone in the Senate tried to block him because they knew he was a Marian guy. They knew he was a populist. They knew that he was going to try to issue some reforms. So what Caesar did is he found himself, as we discussed, Pompey the Great and Crassus, who needed each other, but as I told you last time, were basically enemies.
Mm-hmm.
He got them together and using his, how do I say this? Using his ability to talk other people into doing things they didn't want to do. Basically got them. He sweet-talked them into seeing eye-to-eye with each other because they both kind of liked him, but they were bitter enemies with one another. Pompey hated Crassus's money, and Crassus hated the fact that Pompey had such tremendous military successes. So I think as we discussed last time, they created this triumvirate where Julius Caesar got to go to Gaul as governor and tried to conquer all of Gaul, which is modern-day France. Crassus would be allowed to go out east and fight the Parthians for military glory, and we all know how that turned out. And Pompey got to be consul in Rome for a number of years where he would kind of control the city and take a lot of the wealth from Spain. So they all kind of got what they wanted, and they swore an oath to all support each other's ambitions, and because in the moment, none of them had ambitions that really clashed with each other's.
For now.
For now. We all know what happened later. But it was a pretty successful thing because in 60 BC, the deal was struck. Caesar would run for consul with their backing and win.
Hell yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, so here we are. And I guess we're going to leave Julius Caesar in a happy place because I think everyone, even people who are not really fans of the Roman Republic or Roman Empire, know how things turned out for Julius Caesar. But here we are. The Republic is in a bad place and is now under the control of three really powerful men acting outside the system, bending all of Rome's institutions to their will. And as we know, in the future, Julius Caesar and Pompey would fall out after Crassus dies. Julius Caesar would cross the Rubicon River with his army and march on Rome, much like Sulla. He would defeat Pompey in a series of battles, would be assassinated, which would lead to the civil war between Antony and Augustus, which would be the final nail in the coffin of the Roman Republic and lead to 500 years of imperial rule.
Yeah, I mean, I did not expect that god complex of a man to make the downfall of Rome happen, but, you know, sure.
Rome would never be the same from the moment all this stuff happened. So what do you think of this guy, Maddie? He was born pretty averagely, and just weird things just kind of happened over and over again until he found himself in a position that we're leaving him in. So here's my question for you. Julius Caesar, was he, as I said earlier, just a lucky guy who kind of was always at the right place at the right time? Or was he a singularly capable man who used some of his capabilities for good, but many of them for his own kind of like selfish designs, and was able to wind up where we're leaving him here right now?
I think it was a good combination of the two. I mean, he was clearly him. He stood on business. He owned all the people that he needed to own. You know, he did his thing, and here we ended up. And I think his ambition got him places, and him being in the right place at the right time clearly helped him climb his way to the top.
He did for quite a while, too. All right, my friends. So thank you very much for listening to History and Zoomer. We are going to leave Gaius Julius Caesar. And by the way, Maddie, I don't know if you could tell, I tried really hard to not make this obvious, but Julius Caesar is one of my absolute favorite historical figures. I think he probably is one of the top five most important individuals in the history of our entire planet, certainly of what we refer to as Western civilization, even though that's a loaded term these days, and I don't mean it in that way, but we would probably not be sitting here in America as it is today had Julius Caesar not done the things he did. And for that, I suppose, he deserves some credit, so we're going to leave him in a really happy place as he's on his way to Gaul to conquer the Gauls, right? One of history's most preeminent books, The Gallic Wars, that he wrote while he was in the midst of the conquest. And it's one of the great primary sources that we still have today from Roman times. So we'll leave him. I like to think we're leaving him on horseback, leading the legions into Gaul. We will be back here with you guys in a couple of weeks. And I think next time we're going to talk about another one of my favorite all-time figures. We've talked a lot about in a couple of the episodes of the Roman defeat of Carthage in the Punic Wars, but we haven't talked about is the story of Hannibal Barca, the Carthaginian general who almost defeated Rome in the Second Punic War, and from a very selfish and personal point of view, my favorite of all the Romans of all time, the great Scipio Africanus.
Scipio Africanus. I can't wait to hear about him.
We're going to talk about these two guys. Thank you, everyone. If you stayed with us this long, this is our third episode. We really appreciate it. My name is Rolly.
And
my co-host is engineered by Nick and professionally consulted by Jackie. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Have a great trip in Rome, by the way.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.